Hey, grab a seat. Thanks, kids, for getting our footpath ready. That's awesome. Hey, look, for parents here, there's down the back there, there's a table with some activity sheets that are around the Easter story and Palm Sunday, and there's some clipboards. And the idea is that don't grab the whole container of pencils, okay, but just grab a cup and load in your own crayons and pencils. And if some of you like need activities because you know, get a bit bored as well, like as grown-ups, you can have those as well. So if you get bored today, you can like draw on that. There's a good finder, a maze that's quite complex for the grown-ups. So if you need one of those, they're down the back. That would be cool. Today, it's kind of like, I want to give you some information from Mark 14:15. And as we're going through, there's going to be a whole lot of the story come up on screen that Jordan's going to bring up there that comes from Mark's account of the life of Jesus and around the Easter story. As that's rolling there, though, rather than just be information, I want to tell you the story because it's a story. It's a true story that has real meaning for us today. But I also want you to be thinking beyond the story to what's going on within the story that actually is like almost like a human story and part of what our lives engage with. And I want to just give you some, I guess almost like jump to the end of my message at the beginning to say this is what I'm talking about. And then as we're going through it, you'll be like, oh, that's what he's talking about. Okay, so just bear with me here. Just a few, you know, diagrams here. So if we just imagine that this is like Earth, okay, planet Earth. And within Earth is a whole lot of us, humanity, but also humanity through the ages, okay? And then within Earth, and it doesn't look like a circle, it's a different kind of shape, but we'll just do circles today, is that within Earth, and it's not this big compared to Earth, but there is this place in Earth called Israel. And it's a significant land and people over time because God was doing something for all the people of the Earth through all times, through a specific place and people called Israel. And that's important to note. And as we read our Bible story, that becomes really obvious. And even the stuff we do, like celebrating Palm Sunday today and Easter as there's Passover and different things around that, that's all to do with this people here, but it's also to do with all people. Then we come into here, and there's a smaller circle here, and this is Jerusalem. And so last week we talked quite a bit about Jerusalem. That thought that Jesus starts heading towards Jerusalem is very significant. And when he comes to Jerusalem, he actually spends this week that we're entering into now, going in and out of Jerusalem. There's a little wee place over here called Bethany. We'll just put a B for that. And Bethany is this little village that Jesus stays at, and he wanders in and out of Jerusalem every day. He's going in and out. But when he comes into Jerusalem, he's going to a special place, okay? And this special place is called the temple. And we read that each day Jesus is in the temple courts. And something significant about the temple. Now, in the bigger picture of things, where Jesus finds himself on the earth, God become a man, and as an Israelite living in Israel, and then coming to the city of Jerusalem and now into the temple courts, there's something going on, and I want you to look at this. It's like it's this idea of power in. It's as if there's this power center. Certainly for the people of Israel and for those who served in the temple, the power was at the center. It was this thought, even for the crowds who were celebrating Jesus coming, their thinking is this, that out of all the people of the earth, Israel, we are most important. And with that comes power and importance and we're the priority of God, and that in fact God's given us a city called Jerusalem, called the City of David. Remember David, the king we just talked about. So this is the most important city in the most important nation in this most important earth. And right here at the center is the temple, which is kind of like the power hub where God would meet with his people, but where his people would serve. And the people who are in here serving became some of the most powerful people in Israel, the chief priests and the high priest. And somehow the power, I think, almost like, you know, obviously went to their heads, which is not uncommon to humanity anyway, that we like to be in control. Because with that comes position and pride and comfort, things that we like. And what's interesting is even on this day when they welcome Jesus in, even the crowd are actually thinking, if Jesus can become the king here on the throne, right in the center of everything, he'll bring the power. And with that power, we'll all be fine. What's interesting is as Jesus comes in, I want you to notice, what does he come riding on? A donkey. He comes riding on a humble beast, not on the grand steed. And what we see with Jesus is something different. We see with Jesus almost like this opposite, instead of something coming into the center, and we see with Jesus this. We see that Jesus is a servant. Everything about him is about others. It's really incredible. While others are about themselves, see, the reason the crowd are excited that Jesus is here is because they will get protection from the Romans, that they will find safety and security. And yet everything about Jesus is servanthood. What's interesting is as Jesus is coming towards the center here and the crowd are excited, why are the other leaders of Israel not excited? Because they hold the power here right now. And it says that they were jealous of Jesus. They feel threatened by him. Should they have been threatened by Jesus? No, because Jesus, who is the power, he is God and the King, he's all about serving. He wanted to come to the center to serve the very ones who wanted to kill him. The chief priests and leaders and the Pharisees who wanted him put to death because they were jealous of him and they didn't want him to come and be the new power player here. They didn't realize that he wanted to come and serve them and love them as well. And so this is what's going on in the story of Easter, is this power play here of the central thing where Jesus is actually coming here. Even this, even Israel had forgotten that God actually wanted them to be a light to what was called the Gentiles, the non-Jews. He said, I want you to be like a light in darkness, that you, Israel, will so shine that those who aren't part of Israel, the rest of the humanity, will go, we want to be with you. We want to be with your God. But they were so busy trying to bring everything to the center, they forgot that they had anything to do with taking anything out, let alone serving. And so we come to the story of Jesus. And he comes in and the cloaks are laid down and the palm trees are laid down and people are going like, we want you to be king. And these other people off to the side are going, we want you dead. And the power play's begun. Remember a few weeks ago, what was it, just last week, when we were in Mark 12, there was one guy, though, a teacher of the law, and when he kept hearing Jesus answer the questions, he comes and he goes, oh, Jesus, you're really good at answering questions. I've got one for you. What's the greatest thing? What's most important in all the law? Remember what Jesus says to him? Love God with everything you've got and love your neighbor as yourself. And then the guy answers and says, oh, Jesus, you're right. In fact, this loving God and loving others, this thing called love, is more important than all that goes on in the temple, which was a radical thought. Because they thought everything most important happens here. And what Jesus was saying was, no, what's important is what happens out there with people. And that guy says, Jesus, it's like you've nailed it, because loving God and loving others is more important than offerings and sacrifices, which is what went on in here. And Jesus says, man, you are not far off it. You're very close to my way, to my kingdom, to what I want to bring to the world. And so this week of happenings goes on. And if you look at Mark 13, it's really interesting there that on this day when Jesus is leaving the temple, his disciples, they look at the temple and they're just going, oh, Jesus, have a seat. Let's look back at the temple. That's amazing. Look at those big rocks. They're the best rocks I've seen in ages. Now, I was out at Waitomo yesterday, and we were out on this trail, and there were these rocks. You'd come around a corner, and there's these massive rocks. And it's like, even one of my boys is just going like, look at that, you know? And it's like, when we see impressive things, it's great, isn't it? Like, we love to see what's impressive, what's big, what's grand. And so the disciples, they're actually saying, look at the stones that have been carved and created into this beautiful, it's magnificent. And their focus is on what's magnificent, what's great. And Jesus goes, actually, that's temporary. Like, it's not long from now, and that's going to be totally destroyed. It'll be gone. And I think Jesus is beginning to try and help them understand that the things that we think are magnificent and so important are just temporary. And the things that the leaders of Israel were neglecting, the people, were what matters. And so this focus on the temple continues. What's interesting, though, is as Jesus is talking about this temple being pulled down, is that earlier he had said in one of the other gospel records that he'd told people that you destroy this temple and in 3 days I'll build it again. And they thought he meant this temple here, but he was talking about his body. So a shift had taken place. Instead of the physical temple being the place where they could see and know God, Jesus had come and he'd said, no, here's where you see and know God now. You see and know God through me. And they didn't get that. They didn't get that. In fact, later on, they're going to use those very words against Jesus as they try to convict him and put him to death. What happens on this next day is that Jesus again heads from Jerusalem and the temple courts and he heads back out to Bethany. And he's hanging out at Bethany and it's the Wednesday. And while he's at Bethany, there's this meal had at a guy called Simon's house, Mark tells us. And as they have this meal together, this lady, and it's possibly Mary, the mother of the sister of Lazarus, she comes on in and she's got this really expensive perfume. And she comes up to Jesus and she comes behind him and she pours the perfume over his head and all just this oil and perfume comes down his head and the whole house is full of the smell of it. And she's doing this amazing thing. She's serving Jesus, the one who's the servant. And if you read the story, the reaction's really interesting. That everybody in the room just goes, what did you do that for? What a waste of money. This is like the week we were meant to be generous to the poor, and you go and pour all your perfume on Jesus? We could have sold that, and we could have given the money to the poor. Now, one of the other gospel writers actually fills us in on the backstory. The one that started that discussion was Judas. And he's the one that used to look after the money for the disciples. So all the money got collected in. He was the one that bought the bread and paid for the bus tickets and for the whole crew. He looked after the money. And it tells us that he wasn't honest with that. So he's the one that starts the discussion around we should have sold it and given to the poor. Why is that? Judas thinking, oh, we should have sold that perfume, given to the poor. I look after the money. I take my cut. See what's going on? And it's interesting to see here that Judas is about this. He actually wants Jesus to become king because he wants to be part of Jesus' power play. And then gradually as things start to unravel in the story, he starts to step aside from Jesus because he realizes that there's no power in what Jesus is going to be doing. Now on this day, when they're all complaining about Mary wasting the perfume, what's Jesus' response? He's like, leave her alone. Don't you see what she's done? She's the only one in the room that gets what's going on. You all think it's about me coming to be the king to get on a throne. Mary understands that I'm coming here to serve all humanity through dying, and she's prepared my body for burial because none of you are going to get time to do that. And she's done that. And I want to tell you this. Whenever the story about me is told in the years to come around the world, Mary's story will be told with it. How cool was that? Did you get that? That today, I'm telling you about Mary pouring perfume wastefully on Jesus' head. I'm telling you that today as we tell the story of Jesus' death. And Jesus said that would happen today here at CBC Church in Agora 2019. He said wherever the story's told, you're going to keep hearing the story about Mary. The thing that was wasteful, that has nothing to do with power, has all to do with what I'm about, Jesus says, about being a servant and giving my life, and she prepares me for burial, and I want to say what she did matters. So different. Such a different way to look at life. Then Jesus gets his disciples and says, look, we're going to go and share Passover together. It was a special feast that Israel had each year, and we celebrate it coming into Easter. Well, some of us celebrate it, some of us forget about it, but it's kind of like it's the origin, really, of Easter. So Jesus coming to die on a cross was really because there was the death of lambs in Egypt when Israel were slaves there, and through the death of these lambs, there was this miraculous thing called Passover happened, where an angel passed over their houses and they were set free from Egypt. You've got to go and read that in Exodus yourself to get the backstory. But what he's doing is he's having this meal with his disciples, and they're eating bread and they're eating roast lamb and they're having these different herbs and lettuce and all this stuff. And as they're having this meal, Jesus is now in Jerusalem. Some people want him to be king and some people want to kill him. But as he's there with his disciples, he lets them in on some really sad news. And he says, hey, I want to tell you that one of you sitting here with me, taking bread and cup with me, is going to betray me. One of you is going to help the leaders put me to death. And I find it fascinating the response of the disciples. They're sad by that. That's a good thing. They're sad by that. But their response is this. Is it me? That's their response. Is it me? And it's kind of like our response, isn't it? When we hear something bad's going on, is it going to affect me? Is it me? Am I responsible? And it's almost as if the disciples miss what Jesus is just saying. Jesus is just saying, somebody here is going to betray me into the hands of the leaders and I'm going to die. Oh, is it me? Is it my fault? And which is kind of normal reaction. I guess we'd all do it. But almost as if the reaction, if we were selfless and otherward, would be like, oh no, Jesus, you are going to be betrayed? You are going to die? Is that going to be painful? What will that loss mean for you, Jesus? But in this circle, everybody's thinking about themselves. What does it mean for them? And it's interesting that as the different writers write about that occasion, is Jesus makes it quite clear who it's going to be, but they still can't get it. And I wonder if it's because they're still thinking about themselves. And Jesus in this moment, while they're all worried about who is it, Jesus knows who it is. He knows it's Judas. And here's what's interesting, is he extends love to Judas. You know, later on we're going to take bread and cup, a special sacred thing that we do to remember Jesus' death. When Jesus did this, Judas was there. When he broke the bread and gave it around, he gave it to Judas and said, I die for you. And one of the Gospels says that there's a special piece of the bread. It's like that nice crust bit on the end that you always want to get, you know. And in their case, they wanted to dip that in this beautiful stuff to eat it down. And it's called the sop. It's the favoured piece of the bread. And it's interesting that Jesus takes the favourite piece and he gives it to the favoured one, which is Judas. Like, how different is Jesus? He's not about power. He's about being a servant and loving others. And he gives Judas the sop. Then he gets specific and he talks to Peter over here. And it's interesting in Mark's gospel because Mark possibly is writing the story that Peter told him. That's what most scholars think. And so here's an insight into Peter. And Jesus says to Peter, Peter, I need to tell you this, that you're going to deny me. Because what Jesus had just said, he said, look, I'm like your shepherd and I'm going to be struck down. And when I am, you're all going to flee like sheep. You're going to run away because the shepherd got killed. And Peter goes, not me, Jesus, no way. It doesn't matter what happens. Even if they come to strike me down, I won't leave you. I will never leave you. And Jesus says to him, Peter, before the rooster crows a second time tomorrow morning, you're going to deny me three times. You're going to three times just flatly deny me, deny you know me. But he's like, never, never. I would die for you first. And then it's interesting, it says that all the other disciples said the same. They went, me too, Jesus. I'm as good as Peter, I'm as tough as Peter. Do you see what's going on? Here again, think about the story. Jesus just says to them, I'm your shepherd, I'm going to get struck down, you're going to flee. Where does the focus of the disciples go? We're going to flee? Not us. We'll stick with you. We're going to still be good enough. We're going to man up. And when one of them says it really strongly, like Peter, everyone else goes, and me too. And the whole time, what's the focus? Me? Isn't that like us? And yet, what's Jesus telling them? Jesus is saying, I'm going to be struck down. Nobody's saying, oh, Jesus, you're going to be struck down? How's that going to happen? Where's that going to happen? How do you feel about that, Jesus? How can we support you in that, Jesus? Nobody's paying attention to Jesus. Do you notice? They're all going, is it me? And then they're going, not me. And then they're going, me too. And meanwhile, Jesus then takes them out to a garden, one of their favorite spots in the Mount of Olives, and they go to this garden called Gethsemane. And Jesus is so stressed by it, it says it's to the point of death. That's how much grief he feels with the weight of knowing death is coming. It feels like it's killing him. And he gathers his disciples around him. And he says to them, he says, sit here while I pray. And he began to be deeply distressed and troubled. And he says this, my soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. And I just think, this is Jesus, the one who can walk on water, the one who can feed 5,000, the one who can raise the dead. And he's going, I'm so stressed right now that it feels like it's killing me. Would you pray with me? And they're like, yeah, sure, we'll pray with you, Jesus. So he goes off and he prays. He prays this incredible prayer. As he said, you guys stay watching with me, pray with me. And he goes and he prays and he's saying, Father, everything's possible with you. This thing that's coming, it's like a cup full of wrath. It's this thing I don't want to drink. Would you take it from me? But God, I'm going to do whatever you want, Father. Whatever you will, I'll do. But please, if you could take it. Then he comes back and he finds Peter and James and John and they're asleep. Because they couldn't even stay awake for an hour to be with Jesus while he suffers. Couldn't even be with him for an hour. The ones who went, I'll never die, but I can't keep awake. You know, it's just crazy. And it happens 3 times. And then finally he says, hey guys, wake up. It's too late. Here comes Judas now and his band of, you know, police and soldiers and priests, and they're all coming to get me. And so they come to get Jesus. And now that Peter's awake, right, so Peter can't stay awake, even though he can die for Jesus. I'll die for you, but I can't stay awake for you. But what I can do is I can fight for you, Jesus. And what's interesting is as the interaction happens and Judas comes and gives Jesus a kiss, and what's interesting is Jesus receives the kiss. He welcomes it from Judas. So great is his love. And as it seems that the power is turning to the leaders and to their plan to kill Jesus and to Judas, Jesus lets it. But Peter doesn't want to let the power play shift. He pulls a sword out and he cuts off this guy's ear. I think he tried to take his whole head off, but he's a fisherman, right? So he's not a soldier and he misses it. He just takes the guy's ear off. One of the other Gospels tells us that Jesus picks the guy's ear up and puts it back on, which is kind of funny. But actually, isn't that amazing? Like even in the heat of battle, while Peter has his sword, I will die for you, but I don't really want to die, so I'll kill them instead. And Jesus is going, no, put that away. We don't come here to fight. And he heals the guy. Because Jesus is about loving his neighbor as himself. Because he loves his Father. And so they take Jesus captive. And after Jesus' speech, even Peter runs away. All the disciples run away. They all run away. Just like Jesus said. Remember, he said that the shepherd's going to be struck down and the sheep are going to flee. He gets captured and they all just run and hide. They run and hide. And so Jesus is taken. He's taken into the high priest's courtyard. And as he's taken there, they start to bring accusations against him because they want to put him to death. They can't kill him. They have to get the Romans to do it, so they've got to have a tight case so they can take the Romans and say, this guy's guilty of death. And so one of the things that they bring is this accusation against Jesus, saying, Jesus, you said that you could destroy this temple and in 3 days raise it up again. One is that's a lie, but the other thing is this is the temple. This is God's temple. How dare you say that? What I find interesting is he's the high priest, so he's the most powerful person in Israel, and from Israel's point of view, they would say in the world, and certainly in Jerusalem, and his place is at the temple, he's the guy that once a year gets to go into the center of the temple, to the Holy of Holies, and represent everybody else. He's the most powerful guy, and he's here, and he's grilling Jesus, and Jesus isn't saying anything to him. And then he's bringing all these charges against him. Witnesses are coming, and what I find interesting is the witnesses can't even get their story straight. It tells us their stories didn't even match. And yet he takes this case and eventually he says, so Jesus, are you really the king? And finally Jesus does speak up and he says, yeah, I am. And one day you'll see me coming, not on the donkey, on the branches, but you'll see me coming in the sky when I come back again. And it's interesting that the high priest, he takes his clothes, his robe, and he rips it. It's like his way of just saying, this is words against God. This is so bad, I'm going to rip my clothes over it. He rips his clothes. And it's kind of weird, really, when you think about what's going on. Here's this guy, most powerful guy, high priest, who can't even get the false witnesses to get their story straight. But he's so pious that he rips his clothes over Jesus saying the truth, that he's the king. And so his clothes are torn, and they send Jesus off to Pilate. And Pilate is like the Roman governor. He's like the main guy. And it's interesting that Pilate, who's kind of like the other powerful player in here representing Rome, is that as he goes to Pilate, Pilate interviews him and finds nothing wrong with Jesus. He actually does a better job than the high priest, a more honest job. But what I want you to see is that where power comes into play, corruption happens. Coercion happens. Control happens. It all becomes about maintaining your position. And our lives are like that so often, aren't they? The way we interact with people is about maintaining our position, maintaining control of our lives. And as Pilate's in here, he's trying to hold it all together. And this interaction starts to happen with him and the crowd. And the crowd are stirred up by the leaders. And maybe even some who were in a crowd saying, Hosanna to the Son of David. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. A week later are going, crucify him. Crucify him. And Pilate says, no, I don't want to crucify him. There's nothing wrong with him. And they're just saying, crucify him. And Mark records for us that Pilate, in the end, made a decision to crucify Jesus. Why did he crucify Jesus? Have a look at it. Why? To satisfy the crowd. See the corruption there? See, that so important is it to maintain power that we do corrupt things that don't even make sense? And Pilate sentences Jesus to death. And so they take Jesus, the soldiers, and they put a purple robe on him. And instead of like a crown on him, they weave thorns and they put that as a crown on his head. And they mock him and they hit him. And they treat him as the king in a mocking way. And then they get him to carry a cross, this cruel form of execution. As he's carrying it, he can hardly carry it by now. So bad has the beating been. And they find this guy called Simon, who comes from another land, and he's a foreigner, but he's come with a Jewish faith. He's a proselyte. And as he comes, they see him, and it's almost as if they don't want to take one of the locals, so they discriminate and take this foreigner instead, and they put him in the humble place of having to carry a cross. All this corruption's going on. And Simon carries the cross for Jesus. And they take him out to a place called Golgotha. And they crucify him there. See what it says? They brought Jesus to the place called Golgotha. It was also known as the skull, Skull Hill. It looked like a skull. They crucified him. Divided up his clothes, they cast lots to see what each would get. You see the soldiers? You see the power that's going on? Oh man, what can I get? Man, he's got some sweet gears. Like some of this cloth here hasn't even got a seam in it. It's been seamlessly woven. I want that. Well, you're going to have to play me for that. So they play dice. They cast dice to see who's going to win the jacket and who's going to win the cloak. Such corruption. And you know what I find weird is while this is all going on and then in the verses that follow, people are coming, bringing their accusation against Jesus again. I find that in the middle of that, there's this one little sentence. Did you see it? Four words. What does it say? Read it with me. And they crucified him. I want you to realize that these four words are probably the most important words in the whole book. And you see what they're lost in amongst? Guys trying to win a jacket. And others trying to keep their positions of authority. Everyone's after something, except for Jesus. and it's almost like lost. It's so small. It's almost becomes insignificant, the most significant thing. You can sum up Easter in four words: and they crucified him. Just like that. And you could lose it in there. They crucified him. I want to read to you what it says after that. They crucified two rebels with him, one on his right, one on his left. Those who passed by, they hurled insults at him, shaking their heads and saying, "So, you who are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, come down from the cross and save yourself." It's like Mark keeps on reminding us about this thing about the temple and how important that is to the people and their thinking, and how the sacrifice and offerings are so important, and the high priest is so important, and what goes on there is so important. And it's like they're even rubbing it into Jesus saying, "See, we have the temple. It's so powerful and great. And one day we're going to rule the world from this place. And who are you? Think you can destroy it and rebuild it? Ha! Can't even save yourself." And even those crucified with him throw back the same insults. And then we come to this sentence, another short sentence that says so much. With a loud cry, Jesus breathed his last. And they crucified him. But I want you to note that no one took Jesus' life from him. Did you know that? That nobody killed Jesus? They crucified him, nailed him to a cross. But Jesus gave up his life. They were surprised by that, like the soldiers later on, because they were like, "Man, why is he dead already? He's young and fit. Like, he shouldn't have died this quick." But it was because he gave up his life. He breathed his last because he was about serving us. And I want you to notice what it says next. I'll read it to you. The curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. And when the centurion who stood there in front of Jesus saw how he died, he said, "Surely this man was the Son of God." This is really key in Mark's story. It's so important for us to see this, that in this whole power play that was going on, and really which is a picture of our human hearts, that we want to be in control and we want to make things right for ourselves and we want to be safe and comfortable, but also maybe just that little bit powerful. And we want credibility, and we want so much, and so much about us, that the one who comes to serve us, he dies, and something happens at the center of power within the story, and that's that this curtain of the temple was like torn from top to bottom. Now, some would say from top to bottom means that nobody did it, you know, as in nobody got the bottom of the curtain and tried to rip it. They say that the curtain was as fat as my hand, like the layers of cloth was as fat as the person's hand. Like it's a thick curtain, and especially woven together. It was majestic. It was the curtain that was inside the temple, was the curtaining off the area called the Holy of Holies. We remember that high priest was the only one who could go once a year, and he could go there to do the sacrifice of the lamb for the people in their place so they could know God and be forgiven and be in his family. And on this day, as Jesus outside of the city dies a criminal's death and he gives up his life, something miraculous happens and the curtain is torn top to bottom. God tears the curtain at that moment. It's as if at that moment, God is saying, "I'm done with this. Because the one who's come to serve, he's the Lamb. He's the real high priest," as Hebrews would say. He comes into the Holy of Holies behind the curtain, and he doesn't bring the blood of a lamb. He brings his own blood, and he says, "I will die for the people so that they might live." And as Jesus dies on Golgotha, Skull Hill, inside the city, inside the temple, in the most holy place, the most powerful place, the curtain is torn top to bottom. I sort of figure that the high priest the next day when he noticed would have got a committee together and they'd have figured out how to sew it back up and put it up as quick as they could. So concerned with the loss of power. But I want you to notice what Mark records. Mark doesn't record what they do with the temple. What does he record? when the centurion, this is the guy who leads all the soldiers who have put the robe on and the crown of thorns on and mocked him, led him out, put the cross on Simon, led them out, nailed Jesus to the cross, put the cross in the ground, have also mocked him, have gambled for his clothes. These guys, the guy that leads all these guys, the centurion, who's watched it all and seen what's gone on, he says, surely this man was the Son of God. I want you to notice what Mark's saying. Because this guy's out here with the Gentiles. He's way out here with no power concerning Israel and Jerusalem and the temple. He's on the outside. And I want you to notice what Mark says. Mark says, as Jesus comes and he serves out, notice the first guy to react. The first one to realize that as the curtain is torn from top to bottom, anybody now can access this wonderful relationship with God through Jesus. Even the centurion who killed him, who oversaw the crucifixion of Jesus. Even him. And that's where our story finishes. Jesus is dead. The temple curtain is torn in two. And a foreign Gentile knows God. That's the story of Easter. You go, what do we do with that? Well, this is what I'd like you to think about doing today. We have here bread and cup. And that's the thing that Jesus told us to do on the night he was betrayed. He took bread and said, this is my body given for you. Take it and eat it. Remember me. And then he took the cup and he said, this cup, it's a new agreement, a promise, a covenant I make with you to forgive you through my blood that's going to be shed for you on the cross. Take it, drink it, remember me. So this is something he wants us to do. Take bread and remember his death. Take cup, remember his death today. But today we've got all this stuff down the middle here. And normally we have communion each side and you sort of come down and around, but we're going to do it more awkward today, okay? So you're going to get out of your seats soon if you want to. And I want you to walk down this path, the red carpet as it were, to take communion today. And here's what I wonder that you might want to consider thinking as you do that. Maybe it's a conversation you could even have with God, but I think of this idea of the power in, you know, that as Jesus was coming in to Jerusalem on the donkey, people thought that it was about this power and authority in. And I wonder today as you would come out of your seats and you would walk on here, whether there's maybe a way that you could identify that this is the way that we often walk, that we're about wanting to have control, wanting to have our own way, wanting others to do well to us. And so we come with that. And Jesus would say, I want you to come with your life and I want you to lay it down. Because it's interesting that when he came, he comes riding on a donkey. He comes with humility. So maybe today as you come to take communion, you come with humility and you just come, Jesus, I want to lay the control of my life down, all the stuff down before you, the selfish stuff, the sinful stuff, all of that. I just want to come and I want to lay it down. And then as you would take bread and cup and remember Jesus, and I want you to, I don't know, we're going to have to weave through crowds, but that's what happened on this day, is I want you to walk back out the same way. Because when we come away from the cross, if we allow Jesus to change us, we come away as servants, not as those hungry for power. Let's leave the power here. Let's leave the control here. Let's leave some of the hurt and the pain that comes with that here too, because we've hurt and caused pain to others through that pursuit of power, and others have caused pain to us. Let's leave that here. And as we walk out of here, there's some things that we take with us as servants. See, as you come on in, it's about things like control and corruption and coercion. But as we come out, I think of it like this. It's like we come out with forgiveness, having been forgiven so we can forgive others. We come out with a freedom to not feel like we have to control others or be controlled by others, but we are free to live for Jesus. We come out as family, like where we actually belong, but we long to welcome others in. We come out with that very thing that Jesus said is greatest, going, God, I want to live this life serving you because I love you and I love others. What would it look like to come and leave power behind and to walk away today with the cup and the bread and take that and say, Jesus, change me to be a servant. Change me to walk in your way. Change me to be the person who would lay my life down for others. So I'm just going to pray, and then I just invite you to come and take communion together as we remember Jesus. Just stand with me, and you may like to join me in this prayer. Lord Jesus, I thank you that you decided to go to Jerusalem. It was a dangerous place for you, but you went there. Thank you that you entered the city, and even though the people wanted to make you king, that you were wanting to wear that crown of thorns because you love us. Thank you that though they did so much against you, that you were silent before them and you allowed yourself to be crucified and that you gave your life for us. So today we want to come in a moment and take bread and cup and remember you, your body and your blood, and just say thank you, Lord Jesus. But we want to take a step more than that. We want to lay our lives down to you and just say, Jesus, take our lives. Take those ugly parts of our lives and those hurtful parts, and just would you take them and bring us freedom and forgiveness there, that we might walk down this road away from this place just knowing that we walk in a freedom and a forgiveness that's from you, and that we'd be those who would love the Lord our God with all our heart, soul and mind, that we'd love our neighbours as ourselves, that we'd walk in the way of you, Jesus, and we'd live a life of love. So right now, we just want to come and just receive this from you. Thank you, Lord Jesus. Amen. Yeah, please just come and take this together.